You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here it is, late May 2026. It'll soon be the Memorial Day weekend. And here in Maryland, where I live, on the eastern shore of Maryland, it's a mixed blessing because every year at this time, some little biting flies come out. Luckily, they don't stay very long, maybe a couple weeks. But they buzz around like dive bombers, attack your head, your face, and unless you get a good hat and maybe even a little screen for your face, they are out to get you. And my late wife Elizabeth and I were married right at the Memorial Day weekend way back in 1984, and we had just moved out here, so we didn't know about these little flies. And thankfully, there was a heavy wind that day. Otherwise, I think we, because it was an outdoor wedding, we and the guests would have been eaten alive. But it's also strawberry season. That's the good thing. Oh, soon will be. So we get some of those native strawberries, which are always delicious. Well, what do we have tonight? We'll start off with an article that appeared in the BBC. Many of you may have heard about this on Fox or CNN or the other news outlets. And it's entitled, Senior IS, I like to call it ISIS. They just call it IS in the BBC article, but I'm going to call it ISIS. Senior ISIS leader killed in joint operation, U.S. and Nigeria say. This appeared in May 16th, 2026, and I'll read some of the highlights of it. The Nigerian military has increased cooperation with the U.S. in efforts to combat extremist violence. And I think that one with a photograph that I didn't bother to copy. Nigeria and the United States say they have killed a senior Islamic State ISIS leader in a joint operation. Abu Bilal al-Manuki was described by U.S. President Donald Trump as the, quote, second in command of ISIS globally and the most active terrorist in the world, unquote. ISIS has radically shifted in recent years, with around 90% of its attacks now taking place in sub-Saharan Africa. Its Nigeria-based branch is by far the most active. Nigerian President Bola Tinubu said the two countries had carried out a, quote, daring joint operation that dealt a heavy blow to ISIS. Al-Manuki was declared a specially designated global terrorist by Washington in 2023. And I'll just insert here, that was, of course, during the Biden years, not during the Trump years. But that has continued. And he, that is al-Manuki, was killed along with, quote, several of his lieutenants, unquote, during a strike on his compound in the Lake Chad Basin, a huge region of waterways and swampland shared by Nigeria, Chad, Niger, or Niger, and Cameroon. A military spokesman said intelligence had established Manuki had established a fortified base in the area. And I guess it's pronounced Metele, M-E-T-E-L-E, Borno State. The Lake Chad Basin has long been a stronghold of Boko Haram and its rival faction, Islamic State West Africa Province, or ISWAP for short. The Nigerian military said the operation began shortly after midnight on Saturday. After months of intelligence gathering and reconnaissance, it says zero casualties or loss of assets were recorded, describing the operation as evidence of growing cooperation between Nigerian and U.S. forces. And I'll just skip down a little bit. The military also linked al-Manuki to the 2018 Dapchi schoolgirls kidnapping, when more than 100 girls from a boarding school in northeastern Nigeria were taken by a militant group, Boko Haram. Before pledging allegiance to ISIS in 2015, he was described as a senior Boko Haram commander. Boko Haram began its military campaign to impose Islamic rule in northern Nigeria in the year 2009. Its aim has been to establish a caliphate, a state ruled by a single political and religious leader, according to Islamic law, or Sharia. And the leader that was killed, Bilal al-Manuki, is believed to have hailed from Borno State in northeastern Nigeria. Analysts say his nickname likely came from Manok, a town in the state, following a common regional tradition where people are identified by their hometowns or family names. The Nigerian military previously said they had killed him in 2024, but backtracked on Saturday, saying this was in fact a different fighter, using the same alias. It's also made other claims, similar claims about other jihadists in the Lake Chad Basin. And we'll skip down a little bit, see if there's any other major points. In April, I presume that's this year since no date was given, it says in April, ISIS claimed responsibility after gunmen killed at least 29 people at a football pitch in Nigeria's northeastern Adamawa state. And last Christmas, U.S. and Nigeria carried out a joint airstrike in Nigeria's Sokoto state, targeting ISIS-linked groups. And there was a second article, but I believe it's pretty much overlapping, that appeared in the Washington Times. The first one I read was in the BBC's website, bbc.com, May 16th. This one was also May 16th in the Washington Times. And I'm just glancing to see if there's anything else. These are the words of President Trump. Abu Bilal al-Manuki, second in command of ISIS globally, thought he could hide in Africa. But little did he know we had sources who kept us informed on what he was doing, President Trump said on Truth Social. He went on to say he will no longer terrorize the people of Africa or help plan operations to target Americans. With this removal, ISIS's global operation is greatly diminished. Last November, Mr. Trump designated Nigeria as a country of particular concern for religious freedom, describing the killings of Christians by radical Islamist groups as a genocide. He warned on social media that if the Nigerian government failed to stop the attacks, the U.S. could go into the country, quote, guns a-blazing, unquote, and wipe out Islamist terrorists. And Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said Saturday, quote, so for months we hunted this top ISIS leader in Nigeria who was killing Christians, and we killed him. This should serve as a reminder that we will hunt down those who wish to harm Americans or innocent Christians wherever they are, unquote. Al-Manuki was responsible for overseeing the planning of attacks, directing hostage taking, and managing financial operations, Mr. Hegseth said, noting that the terrorists provided strategic guidance to the ISIS global networks on media and financial operations, as well as the development and manufacturing of weapons, explosives, and drones. Again, that second article is from the Washington Times, June 14th. And, of course, ISIS is known by a number of names. It's also in some venues called ISIL, I-S-I-L, instead of I-S-I-S. And the BBC just simply called it IS. All right. Now, closer to home, we've had some incidents of, well, near riots. Here's a little something from the Gateway Pundit. All hell breaks loose at Deep Sea Navy Yard, Chipotle. Father Shields terrified children as, quote, unquote, teens break out in violent brawl, throw chairs. And if you go to the websites, and this is just one of the ones that I happen to see, you can see some of the things where they're throwing these wooden chairs all over the place. These apparent teenagers, although they're masked, so it's a little hard to tell if they really are teenagers. This is by Christina Layla, as I said, the Gateway Pundit, May 17th. All hell broke loose at the D.C. Navy Yard Chipotle restaurant this weekend after a group of quote-unquote youths got into a violent brawl. A group of terrified patrons, including children, were pushed to the corner of the restaurant as the teen thugs threw chairs at each other. It's unclear what caused the brawl or if anyone was taken into custody. The Justice Department vowed to hold the parents of these violent teens accountable. And at that point, I'm going to jump over because I think we have something a little more specific about that. I'll come back to this if need be. That portion was from the Gateway Pundit on May 17th. And then from the Washington Times, relating to the same story, we had FBI helping investigate viral juvenile brawl inside Navy Yard restaurant. And it said in the... well, we'll skip that because that's an old picture. This is by Matt Delaney, The Washington Times, May 19th. And summing it up, they have three or four bullet points. U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro announced FBI involvement in juvenile crime investigations. A melee occurred at a Navy Yard Chipotle, drawing significant attention. Videos showed juveniles fighting while patrons and employees sought safety. Pirro urged the D.C. Council to renew a juvenile curfew. And now the main article, U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, Jeanine Pirro, said the FBI is joining the effort to track down the juveniles responsible for a melee that erupted inside a Navy Yard Chipotle and went viral over the weekend. Ms. Pirro said she asked the FBI to help investigate in order to get a handle on the youth crime that she said remains a glaring issue in the city. Ms. Pirro said at a Monday press conference, quote, "What happened this past Saturday night at Chipotle in the Navy Yard, and what we're seeing increasingly across the district is not only unacceptable, it is violent, it's dangerous, and it's illegal," unquote. Metropolitan Police said the fight exploded around 8:40 p.m. Saturday in the 1200 block of First Street Southeast, Washington, D.C. Videos of the free-for-all showed several black-clad juveniles throwing punches and hurling chairs at each other while restaurant-goers and employees cowered on the perimeter. While the Metropolitan Police is still leading the investigation, it's distinct. Let me read that. Assistant District of the FBI's Washington Field Office, Darren Cox, said his agency is dedicating resources to tracking down the youths responsible and charging them when appropriate. And this is a quote from Mr. Cox. "If the subjects are 18 or older, they are considered adults in the eyes of the law, and any federal crime they commit will be investigated and referred to the U.S. Attorney's Office here in D.C. for full and aggressive prosecution," unquote. Ms. Pirro also called on the D.C. Council to renew the temporary juvenile curfew, which allows police to break up large gatherings of juveniles earlier in the night, as opposed to waiting for the midnight curfew to kick in on weekends. She re-upped her threat about charging parents as well for their children's disorderly behavior, saying that, quote, "They are responsible for the upheaval that is going on in this district that is impacting everyone who lives here," unquote. Ms. Pirro said parents could face fines, court orders, or potentially 6 months in jail if they are convicted of allowing their child to take part in illegal acts. That second article was from the Washington Times on May 19th. And let me go back to the Gateway Pundit one. Let's see if there's anything else in the tail end of that one. Again, we have some quotes from Jeanine Pirro. is the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia. She said, starting today, my office will aggressively prosecute parents under D.C.'s curfew law and the specific statute that we will use as a violation of D.C. Code 22811. And it involves contributing to the delinquency of a minor, she said. She went on, this statute makes it unlawful for an adult to enable, facilitate, or permit a minor to engage in delinquent acts. And she went on, if you drop your kid off and you fail to supervise them, or if you let them skip school to join the chaos, you are going to face fines, court-ordered classes, and possible jail time. And she said, quote, parents, do your job, or we will do ours. The penalty is up to 6 months imprisonment, so if the evidence shows the parent knew or should have known or permitted or failed to prevent participation, we're going to charge them, she said. And again, that article is from the Gateway Pundit on May 17th. And in a similar story, halfway across the country, this appeared in Fox News on May 17th. Austin police arrest three juveniles allegedly linked to 12 random shootings, injuring four people. And the subtitle says a shelter-in-place order was issued in South Austin as the teens allegedly fired at homes, pedestrians, and a fire station. And this article is by Greg Werner and Michael Singerich of Fox News, May 17th. Austin Police Chief Lisa Davis said suspects fired at apartment buildings, two fire stations, and pedestrians during a series of shootings that unfolded across the city over the weekend. Austin police arrested three juveniles Sunday, who investigators believe were connected to 12 shooting incidents across the city that injured four people and, as we said, struck two fire stations and triggered a shelter-in-place order in South Austin. The police chief said investigators took a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old into custody following the shootings, which began late Saturday and continued into Sunday morning. Ms. Davis said, we have two suspects in custody, a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old. The Manor Police Department said late Sunday that a third suspect who fled from a vehicle following a pursuit earlier in the day had been located and detained. The third suspect is a 16-year-old male. The Manor Police Department confirmed to Fox News Digital. Austin police later took custody of him. And I'm going to skip down a bit. Authorities said the 17-year-old already had a warrant connected to the theft of a firearm from the same store where the 13-year-old allegedly stole another gun. According to the police, the suspects allegedly stole multiple vehicles throughout the spree and fired shots at apartment complexes, homes, pedestrians, and two fire stations. Davis said one fire station was shot at twice and a fire truck was struck while firefighters were nearby. And if you go to the website, once again, that was Fox News on May 17th. It actually does show the surveillance footage showing the young men. Let me skip down here. Let's see now. Austin Police Chief Davis said earlier Sunday, at this time, most of the shootings have occurred in South Austin. No specific motive, and they appear to be random in nature. Authorities initially warned residents to shelter in place in an area bounded by South Florida Lane, and they named some other streets that wouldn't mean a great deal to most of us. And the shelter-in-place order was later lifted after the two suspects were taken into custody. So police continued searching for the third person who fled from a vehicle stopped in the Manor area. Austin police said the suspect cycled through several stolen vehicles during the spree, including a black or dark blue Hyundai, a gold Hyundai sedan, a silver Mazda, four-door, and a white Kia Optima. Davis urged residents not to leave keys or key fobs inside vehicles. And I make sure I do that with my car. If I leave the key fob in there, all they got to do is press the button and start the engine. They're on their way with my car. Not like the old days where you had to hit the key. But don't leave those lying around on the seat. Let me skip down a bit here. Police Chief Davis said surveillance video appeared to show one shooting in front of the store where two people were struck after suspects fired from a passing vehicle. Police also said a man walking his dog was shot in the back Sunday morning. Austin Mayor Kirk Watson praised the coordinated response of local and regional law enforcement agencies, including the Travis County Sheriff's Office, the Manor Police Department, and Texas Department of Public Safety. All right, so these teenagers are getting a little out of their hands, I would say, at least in two of the U.S. cities, and I suspect there are some more. It seems to me I saw, this is an older article, I think maybe from last December, that's referenced here. And a lot of these websites do, they'll give you a little thing that you can click on, a link to go to another related story. The title of this one said, Maryland Police Frustrated After Teen Accused in More Than 100 Car Breaks or Break-Ins Released Within Hours of Arrest. And the sad fact about human nature is if you let people get away with it, they'll try and get away with it, particularly teenagers. And like so many of us, I say where are the parents, but I know being a parent is not easy in these days. It's certainly not like it was when I was a boy. And I know people are always saying that as a cliche, but there's truth to it. But you wonder, what were the parents thinking to let these kids out on their own, probably miles from home? But we shall see. Okay, now an entirely different topic. I mentioned about, a week or two ago, maybe a couple weeks back, about the government releasing a lot of UFO files, or UAPs, as the modern way to phrase it is. I guess that's so, by the way, that the UFO, of course, that's short for Unidentified Flying Object. UAP is a little more general, Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena. That is, things we can't quite tell what in the world they are. Maybe they're objects, maybe they're not. Some of them, of course, are just hoaxes, and some of them are just misidentified natural phenomena. But there is that residue. Here's something from sciencealert.com. New UFO file suggests something strange is happening in the skies. Well, I'll comment on the fact that I have books here from the 1950s, as I mentioned, I think, last week. And 1960s as well, and ever since, that talk about these strange phenomena. So it's not entirely new. It's just that we're getting new information from the government that has been holding on to a lot of the information. Again, this is from sciencealert.com. New UFO files suggest something strange is happening in the skies. It's by James Dwyer. And it says the conversation, maybe that was the original source of the article, dated 14th May, 2026. And one of the pictures, and I don't copy the pictures, simply because they use up a lot of toner. That toner's expensive. But I did copy the caption of the picture, which said, FBI lab composite sketch depicting a bronze ellipsoid object reportedly seen emerging from a bright light in September 2023 and disappearing instantaneously and the source is U.S. Department of Defense. Now, the article says the U.S. government has released a new trove of documents on various cases of unidentified anomalous phenomena, UAPs, many of which would have been described in the past as unidentified flying objects, or UFOs, including photos, videos, and reports of unexplained events sighted in the sky and in space. The files detail, quote, unresolved cases, unquote, where, quote, the government is unable to make a definitive determination on the nature of the observed phenomena, unquote. As a researcher of military strategy, national security, and weapons and technology capabilities, I find several examples of UAPs intriguing in what they reveal and the questions they raise. Taking this new release together with other reports in the past few years, a picture of what might be behind UAPs and the current state of our understanding begins to emerge. Not everything in the new release seems inexplicable. Some images, like those that appear to show unidentified lights recorded by astronauts from the surface of the moon, are most likely just visual noise or other image artifacts. And they do have a picture there taken during the Apollo 12 lunar mission that appears to show unidentified light in the sky. And they have magnified the area of interest to make it more visible. And the source of that picture is NASA, National Aeronautic and Space Administration. Let's get on a little bit. We don't have time to read it all here. The author says astronauts have also reported seeing bright lights with the naked eye. These may be flashes from high-energy cosmic rays, which are more prevalent outside Earth's protective magnetic field. Talks a little bit about things where the camera may have been out of focus. But then the author goes on to say other cases are more difficult to immediately dismiss. Some recent examples demonstrate that something is occurring, even if we do not know what. In 2020, the U.S. Navy declassified three videos recorded by FA-18 Super Hornets, showing mysterious tic-tac objects flying in ways that defy current understanding of technology without any obvious propulsion. And this is a little speaker now. Let me interrupt that such reports from reputable military men have been coming in for years and years, really since the 1940s, and in a few cases during World War II, so-called Foo Fighters. That's what the men called them. I don't know where the name came from. Maybe with a little research, I can find out. But this is not entirely new. It's just that we've got some new data, new pictures, new descriptions. And a lot of these are by reputable military men. They're not just, you know, hoaxes. Whatever they are, the men that describe them, by and large, seem to be dependable. And let's see, that one about the so-called tic-tac objects, the U.S. Navy stated it did not know what the objects were. Advanced sensors on fighter aircraft detected and tracked these phenomena, which suggests it was some kind of real object rather than due to equipment errors or erroneous noise. And another picture, the caption said, an image of a diamond-shaped object moving at an estimated 800 kilometers per hour, detected by a U.S. aircraft in 2024. Source, U.S. Department of Defense. And the author says one of the more intriguing recordings was shared in a U.S. congressional hearing in 2025. It appeared to be recorded by an MQ-9 Reaper drone, which was tracking a UAP. The drone fired a Hellfire missile at the object and appeared to have successfully hit the object. But the object seemed to be deflected from its direction of travel momentarily, suggesting it was a real physical thing, but it then appeared to suffer no damage and continued on its course. And over the past decade, there have been multiple reports of unidentified groups of UAPs around U.S. and European military bases. In several cases, U.S. Navy destroyers apparently met mysterious so-called drone swarms. While these may have been conventional drones, there were no apparent launch vessels nearby, which could have allowed these relatively small drones, with presumably short range, to be where they were. Well, there are other things, and time didn't permit us to go into them. Pretty interesting. I've always been interested in this, although I can't begin to say what they were or are. But it's interesting that even after all this time, as I mentioned last week, I have a book called The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects by Edward Ruppelt, written, I think, in 1956. And it's still being published today because there's still interest. And much of what he says still remains unidentified. Just to give the conclusion, the author says in this article, so what exactly are these objects? There is no easy explanation for these incidents. And he gives some possibilities. Perhaps they're drones. But that wouldn't allow for the fact that these have been seen for decades. Could they be non-human intelligence? He doesn't seem to think so, but he doesn't completely rule it out. It says some incidents are hard to explain given what we know about physics, where the objects seem to behave not in any way that an aircraft should, showing no signs of propulsion and sometimes making sharp turns that are beyond the capability of any known aircraft, human, let's put it this way, any known human created aircraft. Well, and just to conclude, this article, it says it's republished from the conversation on the Creative Commons license. And if you want to read the entire original article, you can click on the link. But this article I obtained from sciencealert.com by James Dwyer, May 14th. All right, we've got another one about the Pentagon. But before we do that, let me just say, this is a program begun by my late wife, Elizabeth. Many of you remember her. It'll be what would have been our 42nd anniversary next Tuesday. So I want to honor her, and I have some special things on that day to honor her. You're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. And as I say, it was mainly started by Elizabeth when I was working full-time and really couldn't devote too much time to it. She told me what to read, and I read it. Now that she's no longer with us, sad to say, I'm preparing the things myself. I hope you like them. I'd love to have you write to me. If you want to write to me, write to Alou, L-O-U, Cavalry, C-A-V as in Victor, E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. So Lou Cavalry, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. I was pleased to get a couple of very devoted followers that sent some money to help us keep the show on the air. That will be very valuable. And I thank those people, several people, in fact. And if any of you could help out a little bit, it's always, in this day and age, kind of touch and go to make sure the program has enough funding. I just don't have the money anymore. My surplus has been spent over the last many months since Elizabeth's death. And, of course, I don't get as much money now from pensions and from Social Security as I did when she was living. So I have to economize, and it's a great help. If you can just send a little bit our way to keep the program on the air, would be greatly, greatly appreciated. And I thank you ahead of time. Again, the address is Lou Cavalry, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And, you know, also might want to visit the website. I'm trying to get everything updated. There's a section on our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com, in which you can listen to programs by going to the archives at that website. And there's a section also under the menu that tells what's in each program. So you can look up the one you kind of like the looks of if you haven't had a chance to hear it, or if you've liked it especially and want to hear it again. You can now go back. I think I've got it back to about March. I'm going to have to check with the wonderful lady who does our website. And I believe I've got it back that far. I'm in the process of getting it back to last year, but that will take a little time. After Elizabeth's death, I think you can understand that things were a little bit in disarray. But I'm trying to get everything much better organized. I want to write some new essays, too, on some of these topics, including some of the ones I've been talking about today. Now, let's take a little break and take a look at some of the things that one of my intrepid listeners from Massachusetts, my old home state, has sent me a whole bunch of clippings. He does this just about every week, very faithfully. And here's a couple that really hit close to home. I love history, even though math was my subject in college. I have always loved history, especially when I no longer had to read what I was told in high school, when I could kind of read the things that interested me. Here's something from the New York Post. I'll just give a little bit of it. This is dated back on May 6th of this year. Telling it true, getting U.S. history right in Independence Park. When the National Park Service removed signs that made George Washington the most heavily criticized individual at Philadelphia's Independence Park, critics accused President Trump of censorship. Now the NPS has unveiled replacement signs, the administration stands accused of sanitizing history. In truth, Trump is rescuing a prominent historical site from radical activists and presenting American history in a much more accurate and informative way. It's time for the 250th anniversary of American independence. A block north of Independence Hall, the President's House site features ruins of the house where Presidents Washington and John Adams lived from 1790 to 1800. In January, the city of Philadelphia sued in federal court after NPS took down displays at the site that focus myopically on slavery. Well, we don't have time to read all of this. I'll just skip down a little bit. Indeed, 25 of that site's 30 signs focused on slavery or race relations, as I found during an August 2025 visit. This, by the way, I don't think I said that, is by Jeffrey H. Anderson, this article in the New York Post. Well, I think I've read far enough that you can see what the problem is here. They are distorting history by making out that the only important thing in the history of this country was slavery. And that is a gross distortion. Was it important? Yes. Especially in the southern states. Did it have much bearing on New England? No. Where I grew up, there were no slaves, at least after the United States became a nation. And after 1865 or 6, after the Civil War, there was no slavery anywhere in this nation, at least no legal slavery. So, slavery is an important part of the history of this country. I don't deny that. But it's not the overwhelming part that some people would make it. So if you want to read this article in detail, go to the New York Post and do a little search for the article entitled Telling It True. Getting U.S. History Right in Independence Park. Author Jeffrey H. Anderson. The date was May 6th, 2026. And on a whole different topic, in my beloved home state of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, here's an article that appeared in the Boston Herald. Let me see if I have a date for it. Let's see now. Don't see a date, but it's quite recent, I know. It says, State Senate, that is the Massachusetts State Senate, puts freeze on ICE agents. No budging, even on convicted felons. This is by Tim Dunn, the BostonHerald.com. And I'll just read a paragraph or two. The clampdown on ICE continues in the Bay State. The Massachusetts Senate passed its version of the Protect Act, Senate Bill 3072, Thursday, in a 37-3 roll call vote, sending the legislation back to the House for consideration, as Senate Democrats rejected several amendments, including one that would allow local and state police to honor ICE detainer requests for convicted felons. Well, we'll stop there, but it seems that Massachusetts is not what it once was. Massachusetts has gone woke, and I'm glad I don't live there anymore. I hate to say that, but it's true. Maryland is not ideal, but it's far better than Massachusetts. And you can see, they just want to put things in the way of enforcing the law. I don't know how to put it any more simply. Well, all right. A little bit more on UFOs. Let's see if there's anything in this article from Fox News that is worth talking about. This one was entitled, Pentagon's Declassified UAP Footage Fuels Americans' Belief in Aliens. That is, space aliens. We're not alone. Tens of millions of documents are being reviewed for release, the White House says. This is dated May 12th by Leo Grissino of Fox News. Bystanders interviewed by Fox News Digital applaud President Trump and his administration's transparency efforts on UAPs following the first tranche of disclosures on Friday. I'll skip down a little bit. I think the transparency is great, that we're finally hearing information that they obviously have known for a while, one respondent said. Another told Fox News Digital, I think if the government has any information about extraterrestrials and they've been holding it as a secret, I guess it's about time to release it for the public to know about, unquote. And I'm going to skip down a little bit in the interest of time. Time is flying today because we've got a lot of articles, and I'm only giving you a small part of them. I'll save some of the best ones for next week. And my voice is beginning to give out, as you can probably hear. And it's never been quite the same since I had that cold or whatever it was a few weeks ago. And it says tens of millions of documents are being combed through and will be released on a rolling basis. And I don't see too much. This one photograph, which, again, I didn't copy, but I did copy the caption. And the caption says, a black and white photo shows a UFO hovering near Holloman Air Development Center in New Mexico in 1957. The image was taken by a government employee and released by the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization after study with no conventional explanation for the object. From the Bettman Archive. And I should mention the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization was one of several organizations devoted to trying to find out more about unidentified flying objects. Also, NICAP was a famous one that I think is now no longer in existence. National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, I believe is what it was short for. There was some in Britain as well, and I think some in France. This was a worldwide phenomenon. This was not just the USA. There were reports of UFOs in the old days in Great Britain, France, big wave in France. They called them waves when you had a lot in a small period of time. And there were waves in the U.S., including some over Washington, D.C. There's a famous photograph of a bunch of them above a electric power plant way back, I think, in the 50s in Salem, Massachusetts, where I went to college. I grew up only a few miles away from there. All right, let's change the topic entirely now. Here we have from Fox News, latest children's hospital in U.S. to open detransition clinic after $10 million settlement with Trump DOJ. And this is by Robert McGreevy of Fox News, dated May 16th, 2026. Texas Children's Hospital, TCH, in Houston, agreed to stop administering puberty blockers to children, pay $10 million in penalties, and open a detransition clinic after a sweeping probe from the U.S. Department of Justice and the state of Texas. The resolution brings to a close a years-long investigation by Texas Healthcare Program Enforcement Division, which concluded that TCH fraudulently billed Texas Medicare for, quote, unallowable and illegal gender transition interventions, unquote. That according to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who wrote that in a Friday statement. Mr. Paxton also wrote, under the terms of this landmark agreement, Texas Children's will establish the first ever multidisciplinary clinic designed to provide medical care to patients who were subjected to gender transition procedures. And Mr. Paxton went on to say, this detransition clinic will help patients reverse the damage caused by ideologically motivated physicians who harm patients by performing dangerous medical interventions for the purpose of transitioning them, unquote. And the word transitioning is in quotes. All services provided through the detransition clinic will be funded by Texas Children's and will be free of charge to patients for the first 5 years of the clinic, according to Mr. Paxton. And he has some other comments, but I'll skip over those in the interest of time. Texas Children's Hospital has some defensive things to say about it. If you want to read those, just go to this article from Fox News. And it shows a picture of detransitioner Chloe Cole. It says she says her event at University of Washington with TPUSA tomorrow has been postponed due to alleged threats from Antifa. Now, as I said, the Texas Children's Hospital had a bunch of defensive things to say, but Chloe Cole praised the decision in her own social media post. She wrote on X, quote, what an incredible moment for the movement to end child mutilation. Texas will be home to the first clinic that helps victims of these barbaric procedures to get back to normalcy, unquote. All right, so if you'd like to read more about that, go to Fox News. The date was May 16th. And the title begins the largest children's hospital in the U.S. to open detransition clinic. Well, what else do we have here? Bill Maher, famous comedian. Another Fox News article by Taylor Penley of Fox News, May 16th. Bill Maher offers a stark warning for Democrats coddling anti-Semites, calls out woke idiots in the party. HBO host Bill Maher blasted Democrats Friday, saying liberals have failed to condemn anti-Semitism, calling out a seething swath of hatred as Israel celebrated its 78th birthday. And Meir said in his real-time rebuke, quote, there's a frothing anxiousness for the literal extermination of this one group, that is Jews. And Democrats, where are you? If any other minority group was being talked about this way, you'd break out the kente cloth and have 10 benefit concerts. But because you see that so many of you, are brainwashed by TikTok constituents, now have an unfavorable view of Israel, you indulge them when you should be correcting them, he added. You don't tell your woke idiots that Israel isn't a colonizer or an apartheid state documenting genocide, and that if you brats had to spend a week anywhere in the Middle East other than Israel, you would understand what liberalism is not, unquote. Meir offered a warning to the left. He said, let me just say this to all who ask me, why are you harder on the Democrats than you used to be until you fix this whole issue? Stop asking me. And it goes on in the article. Let me jump down just a bit since we are getting short on time. During the real-time segment, Bill criticized media figures and aspiring politicians on both the left and right. A rhetoric, he said, fuels hostility toward Israel and Jewish people. The HBO host observed, people say the left and the right can't agree on anything these days. Well, there is this one thing they agree on. Meir then proceeded to call out both liberal and conservative figures who have indulged in anti-Israel or anti-Semitic comments. Others, criticisms from U.S. college professors and right-wing voices, came into focus as well. And Mr. Meir said, Israel was founded on the idea that anti-Semitism made a Jewish state necessary, because Jews would never be safe without one. Can you honestly listen to this rhetoric and not see why that turned out to be true? Meir said, reacting to such statements. If you don't have the right wingers on your side, and you don't have the progressives, what do you have? He added later, referring to Nazi propagandist Joseph Goebbels, quote, these are the kind of statements Goebbels would have read and said, no notes, unquote. Meir also called out Islamophobic rhetoric, but argued its severity pales in comparison to the seeming embrace of anti-Semitism. Headlines like one from the New York Times discussing how fear and vigilance have become constant companions for Jews were shown on the screen during Meir's takedown, emphasizing the severity of hatred against Jews. The Israeli government announced this week it will initiate a defamation lawsuit against the New York Times over columnist Nicholas Kristof's contentious dog rape story, the Israel Foreign Ministry said. Kristof penned a controversial piece headlined, The Silence That Meets the Rape of Palestinians, that features men and women alleging brutal sexual abuse at the hands of Israel's prison guards, soldiers, settlers, and interrogators. Many critics blasted it as propaganda and poked holes in the reporting, specifically a claim that dogs have been trained to sexually assault Palestinians. And another article that I don't have in front of me said that's ridiculous. Dogs are incapable of doing that. So it's all a made-up story. Well, anyway, that's from Fox News on May 16th, 2026, just a few days ago. Once again, if you'd like to write to me, you can write to me, Lou Caverly, L-O-U-C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip code is 21609. I'd love to get your letters. You don't have to send money. If you just like to comment, say, I liked what you said, or I hated what you said. It's always good to get feedback from people. Otherwise, I don't know if I'm doing a good job or not. So it's great. And if you have constructive criticism, by all means, I will take into consideration what you say. Some people in the past said I was using too many doubtful sources, so I've been trying to polish that off. I just subscribed with one of these special deals to the Wall Street Journal. because I think they have some pretty dependable articles. I have one that I didn't get time to do today, but I will certainly do that next week. It's about the Chinese persecuting Christians and one particular pastor who is now in jail in China, but is undeterred in his proclamation of the Christian message. Well, our time is just about up. Here it is. We're approaching Memorial Day weekend. We honor those who gave their lives for this country. We would not be here where we are today were it not for the many men. When I was a boy, there were men still living who had fought in the First World War. Now there are none, and there are very few that fought in the Second World War. Most of those have gone on to the next life. And I will say that I remember one fellow named Chet in particular, who lived at the top of the street I lived on. He had been gassed. We don't hear much about that nowadays. It was never used in World War II because it was ineffective. And both sides had it. So they figured it was just too risky to use it. But in World War I, the Germans first, and then the English and Americans as well, used poison gas. And I'll never forget this fellow, Chet, was hoarse. By the time I knew him, he was well into middle age, of course. In fact, becoming an old man. But he was hoarse as if he had a cold all the time. That never left him. Those are the kind of dedicated men that we remember Memorial Day and Veterans Day. And let's never forget the sacrifices these men and women made. Women, too. Because there were many women. They may not have been in a combat role, but they were nurses. Some of them gave their lives for this country. Let us not forget. Thank you for listening. Tune in next week to The Divided Kingdom. Thank you again, and good night.